Hey, Contra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we are tackling something truly fundamental. We're immersing ourselves in the story of life itself, you could say, or maybe the unit that dictates it. The Gene, An Intimate History by Siddhartha Mukherjee.
Oh, this is definitely one of those big ones. A book that, honestly, it changes how you look at, well, everything. Yourself, your family, the future. Mukherjee argues the gene is just the most powerful, transformative concept in modern biology.
Right. It's completely reshaped how we think about identity, destiny, choice, even.
Exactly. And our mission today, I think, is to really unpack that story, how we went from knowing basically nothing about heredity to, well, where we are now.
Which is kind of incredible. Moving from just reading our genetic code to potentially actively writing it, that's a huge leap.
It really is. And to get your head around that, you have to understand this core tension he lays out. We tend to think of genes as this fixed blueprint, you know, destiny written in stone.
Yeah, the deterministic view.
But Mukherjee argues very persuasively, it's much more like a recipe. That's his key metaphor.
A recipe. Okay, how so?
Well, a recipe needs ingredients, right? Things like your environment, your experiences, diet. And it needs regulation, someone deciding when and how much of each ingredient to use. Only then do you get the final product.
Ah, I see. So thinking of it as a recipe immediately undercuts that rigid, it's all in your genes idea. It gives you some, well, some agency back.
Precisely. It highlights this dynamic interplay between nature and nurture, which is why the book feels so urgent right now.
Okay, so let's talk about the author telling this story. Siddhartha Mukherjee. He seems uniquely placed for this, doesn't he?
Absolutely. He's a practicing physician, an oncologist, a cancer researcher at Columbia. So he's got this rare combination of frontline clinical experience and really deep research knowledge.
And he's not just a scientist. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer. The emperor of all maladies, his biography of cancer, was incredible.
Right. So he has this amazing ability to take really complex, sometimes abstract science and make it feel, well, human, grounded in actual experience.
Which is where the intimate part of the title comes in, I suppose. He weaves in his own family's history, mental illness specifically.
Yes. He talks quite openly about his father's bipolar disorder and an uncle's schizophrenia. It ties his scientific quest to understand genetics, to understand vulnerability, directly back to his own bloodline, his own story.
That makes it much more than just a history lesson, then.
Oh, definitely. It's not some dry textbook. It feels like a personal journey, trying to understand what we inherit, what that means, and maybe what responsibility comes with passing things on.
So the book itself, you said it's structured like a biography of the gene. Where does that story, that biography, actually begin?
Well, he touches on antiquity, you know, the earliest questions people had about why children resemble their parents. But the real scientific story kicks off with Gregor Mendel.
Ah, Mendel and his peas, the 19th century monk working away quietly in his garden.
Exactly. The unsung hero for a long time. Through just incredibly meticulous experiments, he showed that traits weren't just blended together like paint. They were passed down as these discrete, predictable units or factors. We now call them genes.
He basically figured out the fundamental rules of inheritance, the basic math behind it all.
He did. And that foundation lets Mukherjee cover this vast sweep of history from Mendel's quiet garden through the sort of chaos of the molecular revolution in the 20th century, right up to gene editing tools we have today.
But it's not presented as just a smooth path of progress, is it? He makes it very clear there were some really dark turns along the way.
Terribly dark. That brings us to eugenics.
Yeah.
He spends significant time on this and frames it as a critical moral warning for us today.
How did that happen? How did this new science get twisted so quickly?
Well, people like Francis Galton, Darwin's cousin, grabbed onto these early ideas about inheritance and coined this term eugenics, basically, good breeding for humans. It turned science into a political tool aimed at controlling and, quote unquote, purifying the population.
It's chilling how fast that happened. Turning a tool for understanding into a justification for, well, for horrors.
Absolutely. It led directly to things like forced sterilization programs. Tens of thousands of people in the U.S., particularly minorities and the poor, were sterilized against their will. The Kerry Butt case he details is just heartbreaking and infuriating.
And that thinking, tragically, didn't stay confined to the U.S.
No, it provided a sort of pseudoscientific justification for the even more horrific racial hygiene policies in Nazi Germany. Mukherjee really forces us to confront that scientific knowledge isn't neutral. It comes with immense responsibility.
It's a really sobering pause in the narrative. But essentially, before we get to the next big leap, the molecular revolution, mid-20th century.
Right. So after Mendel, the question wasn't just how traits are inherited, but what is the actual physical stuff? What is the gene made of?
And this leads to that famous, almost frantic race to discover the structure of DNA.
Yes, the double helix. He captures the drama really well, the competition between teams. Watson, Crick, Wilkins, and crucially, Rosalind Franklin.
Her X-ray photo, photograph 51. It was apparently key.
Absolutely essential. Once they figured out that structure in 1953, the elegant spiral staircase, it immediately suggested how this molecule could store information and copy itself. It was a massive breakthrough.
Okay, so they had the structure, but that was only part of the puzzle, right? Knowing the shape didn't tell them how it actually worked.
Exactly. You have the blueprint or the recipe book, but how do you read it? How does it actually do anything? This led to what it called the central dogma of molecular biology.
The central dogma. Okay, what's that in simple terms?
Basically, it's the flow of information. DNA holds the master instructions. Those instructions get copied into a temporary message molecule called RNA, and then the RNA message is used to build proteins.
And proteins do all the work in the cell?
Pretty much. They're the enzymes, the structural components, the machinery of life. So the central dogma explains how the genetic information actually gets translated into action.
And then scientists like Nirenberg and Khurana, they crack the code itself. Figured out the language.
Yes, they deciphered the codons, these three-letter words in the DNA sequence, that specify which amino acid building block goes where in a protein. Suddenly, we could read the book of life.
Wow. Okay, so structure, then code. What comes next? Mm-hmm. Intervention.
That's right. Starting around the 1970s, we see the birth of recombinant DNA technology. Basically, learning how to cut, copy, and paste genes from one place to another.
And that launches the whole biotech industry.
It really does. And it also leads to the first, often very risky attempts at gene therapy, trying to fix genetic diseases by altering genes.
He talks about those early cases, right? Like David Better, the bubble boy. Hopeful, but often tragic outcome.
Yes. And then there's the really pivotal tragic case of Jesse Gelsinger.
What happened there?
He was an 18-year-old who participated in a gene therapy trial in 1999 and died as a result of a massive immune reaction to the treatment vector. It was a terrible setback.
A tragedy?
A huge tragedy. But it was also a crucial wake-up call. His death forced the entire scientific community to pause, reassess, and dramatically strengthen safety protocols before moving forward with human gene therapy.
And that brings us up to the modern era, the future frontier, as Mukherjee calls it. And the big player there is CRISPR, right? CRISPR-Cas9.
Exactly. CRISPR is the game changer.
Why is it so different from those earlier technologies?
It comes down to precision and ease of use. The older methods were kind of like trying to edit a huge book with, I don't know, scissors and tape. Clumsy. CRISPR is more like a word processor's find and replace function. It's relatively cheap, it's fast, and it allows for incredibly precise targeted edits to the genome. It gives us this unprecedented power.
Which leads back to that idea you mentioned earlier.
Yes. We're shifting from just being readers of our genome to potentially becoming its writers.
And that is, well, that's a profound shift. Suddenly, the ethical questions aren't abstract anymore. If we can rewrite the code for, say, intelligence or height or other non-disease traits, should we?
That's the multi-trillion dollar question, isn't it? The book doesn't give easy answers, but it forces us to confront the sheer scale of that responsibility right now.
Okay, let's try to distill some of the core messages Mukherjee wants us to take away. We've already hit on one big one. The gene is recipe, not blueprint. Why is that metaphor so important for us day to day?
Because it pushes back against fatalism. It says your genes give you predispositions, maybe risks, potentials, but they need that environment, those experiences, your choices to actually manifest. It reminds us that nurture plays a huge role alongside nature. Our choices matter.
Even when dealing with things that run in families.
Especially then. Which links to the second big theme, complexity over simplicity. For most things we care about, intelligence, personality, risk for common diseases like heart disease or mental illness, it's almost never just one gene doing the work.
Right. It's usually lots of genes interacting.
Dozens, maybe hundreds, interacting with each other and with the environment. This is where epigenetics becomes so important.
Epigenetics. That's about how genes get turned on or off.
Exactly. Think of DNA as the hardware, the basic code. Epigenetics is like the software or maybe sticky notes on the recipe page, telling the cell which genes to use, when, and how strongly. And crucially, environmental factors, diet, stress, toxins can change those epigenetic marks.
So the environment can literally change how our genes are expressed without changing the DNA sequence itself.
Yes, which reframes things like hereditary risk. It's not necessarily a fixed sentence, but a complex interplay we can potentially influence through lifestyle and environment.
Okay, that's huge. What's the third main theme?
It's what he calls the democratization of genetic knowledge. Think about it. 23andMe, ancestry DNA. Sequencing your basic genetic information is now cheap and accessible to almost anyone.
Spit in a tube, get your results back.
Right. And while that's fascinating for tracing ancestry or maybe flagging some health risks, it throws up enormous societal challenges.
Such as?
Well, privacy, for starters. Who owns this data?
Yeah.
How is it being used? And then there's the risk of genetic discrimination. Could employers or insurance companies use this information against you? We need widespread genetic literacy to navigate this.
We need to understand what this information means and what its limits are if we're going to build fair policies around it.
Absolutely. Informed public debate is critical.
Mukherjee is such a great writer. The book must be full of memorable lines. You mentioned the recipe analogy already.
Yes, that one really sticks. Another point he makes, which I found fascinating, is about the history of the research itself. He observes that we know vastly more about the genetics of disease than we do about the genetics of normalcy.
Hmm. That's interesting. A bias towards studying what's broken.
Kind of. We've focused intensely on finding genes linked to illnesses, which makes sense, of course. But it means we arguably know less about the genetic underpinnings of, say, resilience or health or just typical human variation.
A different way of looking at the genome.
And then the phrase that really captures the current moment, the one we keep coming back to, that shift from being readers of our genome to becoming its writers.
That sums up the power and the burden of where we are now.
It really does. The responsibility is immense.
So, thinking practically, how can listeners use the insights from this book in their own lives?
Well, on a very personal level, it empowers you to have better conversations with your doctor. Understanding your family history, asking informed questions about genetic risks or predispositions.
And maybe understanding things like pharmacogenomics.
Yes, exactly. That's the field looking at how your specific genetic makeup influences your response to medications. Knowing this could help doctors choose safer, more effective drugs for you personally. It's becoming more common.
Okay, that's the personal angle. What about the bigger picture, societally?
I think the biggest takeaway is the need for vigilance, informed by history. Understanding the eugenics movement, how easily science was misused, helps us spot the warning signs today.
So we can resist any modern versions of genetic prejudice.
Precisely. We need to actively work against creating a world where access to genetic enhancements, if they become possible, creates new divides, genetic haves and have-nots. Scientific literacy is key to participating in those democratic debates.
When you finished the book, what was the one thing that really stayed with you? What surprised you or struck you the most?
For me, it was that stark duality of knowledge, the very same scientific principles, the understanding of inheritance that hold the promise for curing terrible genetic diseases. Those same principles were twisted just decades ago to justify unimaginable horrors. It's a profound call for humility, I think, and caution.
Yeah, I agree. That double-edged sword is really sharp here.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what resonated most was how personal he makes the science feel.
Yeah.
The quest to understand the gene isn't just about molecules in a lab.
No, it's deeper.
It's fundamentally about understanding ourselves, our identity, where our vulnerabilities come from, how we're connected to the past, to our families. It shows that while our genes provide the script, we are still the actors living out the play, making choices within that framework.
Well said. And that seems like a good place to wrap up this deep dive.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.